It was 2.5 years ago that my very, very good friend, her husband died suddenly at 54 years old. He was out at work, he was on a gig, and he didn't come home, and they had three teenage boys. What could I do being in Texas with her being in California at the time? What we're going to talk about on today's episode is that you are not alone. Navigating aphasia care can happen successfully when you have community support. I'll tell you more about my story as we go through this episode, but let's jump right in to our topic today.
Welcome to the Listen for Life podcast with Genevieve Richardson. Genevieve is a speech-language pathologist rehabilitating adults with communication challenges after a stroke or due to a neurological impairment. Get equipped with knowledge from experts in the field and professionals you need to know. We'll hear stories and experiences from others who are navigating life with aphasia. So, put your earphones in and take a walk outside. This isn't just a podcast. This is a community, a resource, and a support system. We're in this together. Do life.
I'd like to introduce to you Betty. Betty is a recently retired manager of a bustling clothing store. She thrived on just the intricacy of everything that had to happen, working with customers, working with her staff, making sure all the displays were just perfect and restocked, and you know, everything that goes with managing a clothing store. Her husband had retired a couple of years earlier and he loved to golf. They were planning to take a cruise to Alaska, something they had both dreamed about but never made time for when they were both working. But yet, overnight, her husband had to go to the hospital in the ambulance. He woke up, she woke up, when he couldn't cuddle with her. He couldn't get his right arm to cooperate, to cuddle with her as they were sleeping at night. He woke up with right-sided weakness and they were both terrified. So a quick call to 911 and the ambulance was on the way. For the next 8 weeks, Betty was at his bedside and with him going to therapies, whether it was on the acute care part of the hospital, because he did spend a couple of days in ICU and had to go to step down, those kinds of things. And then he moved into inpatient acute rehabilitation. And Betty was there every day, learning from the therapist, asking questions, asking the doctors, working with the case manager, trying to figure out what her husband would need to transition from the hospital setting where he had all of this help and the nurses, because now he was in a wheelchair. Yes, he was learning to walk again, but he would not be going home walking. He'd be going home mostly in a wheelchair with small bursts of being able to walk with a walker with supervision and assistance. So Betty was reeling, you know, just weeks ago, they were excited about their upcoming Alaska trip, and now her husband's coming home wheelchair bound and everything that goes with it. In addition to the physical changes, he now has aphasia and he can't express himself like he used to. He understands most things, you know, and most of what's going on around him, but not at a deep level to where he could help her with decision making, where he could help her understand maybe some of the nuances of the finances, because he managed all that stuff before. The retirement accounts, how they manage their will and their trust and all of that kind of stuff that's locked up in a safety deposit box. She somewhat knew of it, but he really was the point person on that in their lives. So she was reeling. She was just surviving while she's going to the hospital every day to be with her husband and to learn what she could. She wasn't sleeping. She lost a bunch of weight. She wasn't eating like she should be. And this was all taking a toll. So what does Betty do when her friends, family, her church group, her support system comes to her and says, "Let us help. How can we help you?" She had no idea how to answer them, because Betty prided herself on managing multiple situations, multiple people, putting out fires here and there at the store, managing stuff at home. She prided herself in keeping their home immaculate and getting hot meals on the table every night, even though she worked and her husband was retired. Her whole identity was being the successful store manager and managing all of that, but also being the successful, what she perceived and thought of herself as, the successful wife at home, providing for the home and her husband and staying in contact with friends and their adult kids, those kinds of things. But when she was confronted with a question from her friends and loved ones, "How can I help?" she had no answer for them. So this episode, we are digging into why would someone who clearly needs help, like those of us who might be on the outside, why might they be declining help? So let's dig into some of the why, because it might help us understand how we can get into doing the how, to actually get activated and doing things to help a family that has a new diagnosis of aphasia and the husband's coming home in a couple of days. So the wife, like Betty, she might decline help from others because she feels overwhelmed and she can't possibly start the thinking process. What could she have somebody come over and do? There also could be privacy and intimacy concerns. She may not want others. Again, think about Betty. She has a pride about how she takes care of the house, how she takes care of her husband, communicates to people, and how she manages the store. This is ingrained in her. She may not want people coming into her house. It feels like an invasion, or maybe it feels like people are judging her if she doesn't have it all together like she perceives she's supposed to. She might have guilt. She may not want to obligate others to coming in to help her, even though they've offered, even though they ask, they send text messages, they send nice things to her. She may not feel like she's in a position to impose upon them. Betty could be having denial or underestimate the situation. She may not completely understand what it's going to be like when her husband comes home, whereas someone on the outside might be more apt to seeing what the challenges could be with him coming home in a wheelchair, for example, the physical barriers, the aphasia, the communication barriers. The fear of judgment can be very strong. Again, this has to do with her identity and the woman she is and what she has seen as value in her life. She may also want to feel in control. She may not want others to come in for fear, possibly, of others taking over, of taking control. She just got slapped in the face with this unexpected diagnosis of a stroke and aphasia. And she feels out of control when normally in her day-to-day life, she's in control. It's not without the realm of possibility that she could feel like, or that people see, she has lack of awareness. Maybe she's got tunnel vision and she can only see this much when really other people can see the big picture and she can't. Maybe she has hope for a quick recovery. Maybe she feels like, you know, doggone it, he's just going to wake up tomorrow and he's going to be back to the man I love and we are going back to Alaska. We're going on our cruise, doggone it. This is what we've been planning for years. All I had to do was retire and we were going to go. He's going to wake up tomorrow and it's all going to be better. She may have trust issues. She may not feel like she can trust people coming into her house. Maybe that she thinks of it as her domain and she doesn't want people coming into it. So what can the people on the outside of Betty, what can they do? How can they help? What are the strategies that they might be able to use to really engage with her and provide tangible day-to-day help? So first off, I gave you this list of reasons why she might not be asking for help. The person that wants to offer help could look at this list and try and figure out with what they know about Betty, what might her objection be? If you know what someone's objection might be, you can possibly pivot and come up with a reason as to why you can help. So let's keep going in this episode and talk about understanding the hesitancy of a spouse or a caregiver in accepting help might be due to guilt, privacy concerns, sense of duty that she needs to be superwoman and manage it all herself, right? This happens. You think it's, maybe it sounds silly to you hearing me explain it this way, but many of us have this kind of understanding and that's part of our identity. So how can you, being on the outside, help? You can approach with empathy. Start by acknowledging that, Betty, I understand that you would prefer not to have people come into your house. But how about this? Can me and Mary have a key and let us help you navigate these next couple of weeks? Let just the two of us come into your house. Let us bring you groceries, take out your trash, pick up your mail, help sort your mail into piles for you. Let us help you decrease some of the things that you need to do so that you can help focus on Bob and what he needs. So I'm going to come back now to my story about my friend in California who lost her husband suddenly. I was not in a place where I could physically fly out to be with her and be of help. She had amazing friends there on the ground that had been far more in contact with her than I had been since I had moved out of state. But what I could do is I could do research. So I got on my friend Google and I looked up things about what do you do when your spouse suddenly dies? What do you need to think about? How do you work with a funeral home? Do you do a funeral? Do you do a memorial? What are the questions to ask? What are the financial repercussions of, you know, getting a casket and a memorial service? And how to, just so many things. So I ended up creating a checklist. And doing my research, I put these things in order so that with her friends that were on the ground, I communicated thoroughly with them, gave them the tools, let her know that I gave them the tools so that they could help guide her day by day to help making the decisions she needed to make, make sure she considered what she needed to consider, contact those who she needed to, the insurance company, Social Security, his work, whatever the case may be. We came up with a very comprehensive list, and that took a lot of burden off of her. She could then focus on her boys. She could focus on those three beings in her life and helping support them as they were grieving the loss of their dad. Because I was able to do that research, help her friends on the ground. We had tons of conversations, just kind of problem solving. How could they help be that kind of stopgap? How could they coordinate care for those that wanted to bring meals, those that wanted to take the boys to their sporting events so that she could have some time to breathe and think and to grieve. This is what family does. This is what friends do. This is what community can do. Let's say Betty is your neighbor. What can you do as a neighbor, knowing who Betty is, knowing who Bob is? What could you possibly do to be useful? Well, what about overseeing the outside of her house? Betty has great pride in her hedges being trimmed and the grass cut just a certain way and looking good and watered. Say, Betty, I will talk to your yard guy and make sure he's taking care of it. I will help you take out the trash cans and bring them in. You don't need to worry about it. Take that off your plate. That is an I will statement. I will do this for you. So then Betty doesn't need to worry about it. The next step from that is knowing who that coordination person is, if there can be a coordination person. So you share that I'm the neighbor, I live on the left side of Betty's house, and I will do this. So let's say Betty is still hesitant to let anybody else do anything other than the yard work and trash, right? Why not suggest a trial period? Betty, and maybe this is her best friend from church. Betty, let me and Mary come in for the next month and help you manage meals and the groceries and clean out the refrigerator and those kinds of things. See if you can get her to agree to a temporary, short-term solution. That coordination person is key in this whole situation. For my friend in California, it took so much pressure off of her and allowed her closest friend, Jenny, who was there on the ground, to manage these things. And it also allowed the people that wanted to bring meals and to take the boys' places, allowed them to feel like they were being helpful and useful. It's not just about the person like my friend who lost her husband. It's about community and figuring out these roles. And when you have something that happens, like a sudden stroke with aphasia or a sudden death in the family, how do you mobilize? How do you let everybody get what they need out of the situation? Sounds funny because, right, it's not the other people on the outside that lost the person, but yet they still want to help. If you want to help, try to respect the person's wishes. Stay connected, even if it's putting a card or a note in the mail, even if it's just sending a text message and saying, Betty, I'm thinking of you. I would love to bring you coffee. Can we just sit down on Tuesday for 30 minutes? I'd like to give you a hug. Maybe it's something as simple as that. And then lead by example. Sometimes the initiative needs to be non-intrusive. And you, if you're close with Betty, can lead by example and share with others what was successful. What did Betty let you do to help her? And maybe they can come up with a way to help her too. So let's take this from one other perspective. Let's look at what Betty and Bob's needs might be that first month of getting home from the rehab hospital. Grocery delivery and management, home-cooked meals, cleaning out the fridge if those home-cooked meals don't get finished. Last thing Betty needs to do is to go, well, how old is this mac and cheese casserole? Is it green? No. But can I eat it? I don't know. So what if somebody else could take that on for her? And then what if there's a master calendar for who's going to do what? Jane, who lives next door to the left of Betty, is overseeing the yard work. Well, maybe she can take that on for another month after that. What are some action steps in this first month that Bob is home from the hospital? Coordinate a network of volunteers. use online tools like a Google Calendar, something where people can easily see who's doing what when. Betty doesn't need to have 5 meals delivered on the same day. She needs those spread out so they don't go to waste, right? Because that would be disappointing. And then regularly check in with Betty, see how she's doing, check in with the coordination person. So Betty and Bob's needs may change a lot in the next 2 to 4 months, so 2 months after he's been home. This is where Betty could start using a break. If she physically has to help care for Bob, help with transfers and showering and dressing, that's a whole lot more on her role and a physical toll on her. What if she would be willing to let you come in and do laundry? And if she likes laundry done a certain way, ask her how that is and then execute. And then plan to come back once or twice a week to keep that laundry under control and put away so she doesn't have to worry about it. That would be a great way to help. Figuring out if there's finances to pay for paid housekeeping. Maybe it's just 2 hours a week. Somebody come in and sweep and vacuum and mop the floors and dust to take some stress off of Betty. Because remember, she wants her house a certain way so that it, you know, for her psychologically, keeping her house and her laundry in order can go a long way to reducing her stress. So maybe there's finances and you, the outside person, could shop around, do the research, find the best person, interview them to come in and help take some of that burden off of her. Maybe it's weekly companionship to come in and hang out with Bob, watch a football game together, you know, play cards, have a cup of coffee so that Betty can just breathe and she can be in the house, she could go out of the house, whatever the case may be. So let's talk about a next phase. Could be once Betty, now the home care is over and now Betty has to start taking Bob to outpatient therapy and he's got to go through OT, PT, and speech. So he's going to be out of the house 3 hours just for therapy plus drive time to and fro. Maybe there's a couple days a week you could volunteer to drive Betty and Bob so that she doesn't need to deal with that and she could just relax on that car ride. This is really the point where Betty could really use a little more time on her own. Maybe if it's appropriate, again, you have to ask and look at what the big picture situation is. Maybe you could take Bob to therapies. Maybe you could be there to be on the speech therapy visit and learn communication strategies and take some of the pressure off Betty. So as we wrap up this episode, I hope you can take away some very tangible steps, some things you can do so that you on the outside that want to be the helper, you have to understand where Betty is and who she is, what is her identity, and, you know, gently let her help you help her and Bob do what needs to be done. And then taking it from the perspective of Betty and Bob's needs changing throughout those first several months home. But it really doesn't stop there. The last thing I'm going to leave you with is even after outpatient is done, Betty and Bob still need companionship. They still need people checking up on them because it's easy for volunteers to get burnout, to say, oh, the crisis is over, so I can just go back to my life. But sometimes this is where you are needed most. This is where you can make the biggest impact for Betty and Bob in their situation because the tendency for folks with aphasia and their families is to become isolated. They don't want to be a bother to others. You know, maybe they allowed you all to come in and help them so vigorously those first 4, 5, 6 months, and they don't feel like they can ask anymore, and people just start to fade away. And this is just a natural thing. It's not that somebody's being mean and withdrawing from Betty and Bob. It's that it's just a natural tendency for this help and volunteering to fade away over time. But keep in mind that this is perhaps when Betty and Bob need you most, to draw them out, to encourage them to participate. Maybe it's coming in to play dominoes or cards, or bringing in a meal and sitting down together and helping Betty do the dishes and put them away before you leave. Maybe it's just something as simple as that. So I have nothing but praise and affirmation for those of you who support folks with aphasia and their families. But I encourage you, even months and months down the road, don't forget them. Find small ways to connect, because isn't that what the human spirit, isn't that what we all strive for? Even if we say we don't want it, we all strive for connection, purpose, meaningfulness. As I leave you for today, one last thing. I encourage each of you who know someone with aphasia, if you yourself are living with aphasia or you know someone, I have a downloadable PDF. It's short, it's quick, it's easy to read. 5 things you know about aphasia. You can get it right now on my website, dolifespeechpathology.com/5. If you don't remember that, go to my website, dolifespeechpathology.com. On the homepage, down at the bottom, you will see this resource. Download it now. I would love to hear your feedback. Wishing each of you a wonderful day. Keep moving forward, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Listen for Life podcast. We hope you feel empowered and supported. Head over to listenforlifepodcast.com to see the show notes with links and information from today's episode. Do you have a topic, a resource to share, or a guest recommendation? Inquiring minds want to know. Let us know in the comments section. Wishing you a fabulous week.